The Rebellion, Chapter 42. If you have been naughty or disobedient, then you are punished. If you have been very bad, then your punishment usually is severe. Sometimes you are spanked. Other times, for a week, you must go to bed early. Many times when you are punished, you become angry besides. Instead of being sorrowful because of your disobedience and asking forgiveness, you become angry. You think this punishment is too severe, and you say, "I do not deserve that." You go to your room grumbling. Yes, you even answer your father or mother impudently if they ask you something. Have you never done that? It is sinful and ungodly. However, you will not give in, but you revolt against it. So it was with the Israelites. They also were wicked. They had refused to march forward into the land of Canaan. They wanted to choose for themselves a new captain to lead them back to Egypt. If God had not interposed, they would have stoned the leaders given to them by God. The Lord held them back. Otherwise, it would have happened, that is sure. Then the punishment came, a terrible punishment. They were not permitted to enter the promised land. No, everyone who was 20 years and older would die in the wilderness. They had to return to the wilderness. Instead of repenting of their unbelief, the Israelites became angry. They grumble and murmur as they marched back, for they had to. Still, the dissatisfaction was prevalent. They talked together about it, and secretly they blamed Moses. But that was not true. No, it was just the opposite. They had to thank Moses for their lives. If he had not prayed for them, all the people would have been slain. There was one among them who had the most to say. He was Korah, a Levite and a cousin to Moses. He soon obtained a few friends. They were Dathan and Abiram, two brothers of the tribe of Reuben. Together they whispered to each other, speaking a great deal of evil about Moses. They made up all kinds of lies, and they spoke to others about it. Before long, and there were 250 distinguished Israelites, every one a prince, agreeing with them and promising to help them. One day these agitators and the 250 princes go to Moses. Moses looks surprised. "What do you want? For what reason have you come?" he asks friendly. Their faces, however, are stern and arrogant. They snarl at him. "It has lasted long enough. You really think you can do with us as you please, and that you can domineer us. But we have had enough of that. You and your brother Aaron must think you are better than everyone else. However, do not imagine that. We are all holy, for the Lord has spoken to all of us. Isn't that true, men?" The 250 princes nod and cry unanimously, "Yes, yes, so it is. We have as much to say as you." A painful silence prevails for a moment. Moses is shocked when he hears this. We read in the Bible that he fell upon his face. What must he do? Must he defend himself? No, he will not do that. "All right," he finally says in a low voice, "tomorrow the Lord will make known who the high priest is, and who will be your captain. Come back tomorrow. Every one of you must bring a censer. Each of you can sacrifice, and the Lord will show who is to be his servant. They agree, and everyone returns to his tent. They decide to wait until tomorrow, but they are so confident of the outcome and that they long for the morrow to come. Moses also goes to his tent. He bends his knees and prays to God. He realizes the wickedness of Korah. Do you really know the intention of Korah, children? He wants to be high priest instead of Aaron. Dathan and Abiram want to be the captains. They are the chief men of the tribe of Reuben, and Reuben was the firstborn or oldest son of Jacob. Therefore, they want to be the leaders. They think they are entitled to this. All this happens due to their dissatisfaction of not being permitted to enter Canaan. They feel that if they could rule, everything would go better. This is what they think in their foolishness and haughtiness. Moses feels that the outcome will be sad for these men. Therefore, he desires to warn them before it is too late. He calls for his cousin Korah to come. He comes reluctantly. Moses talks seriously with him, warns him not to do it. But it is of no use. Korah will not listen. Moses also sends a message to Dathan and Abiram, asking them to come to him for a moment. But they do not come, but refuse to go to him. It is your fault that we must wander in the wilderness so long. You promised to bring us into a land which flows with milk and honey, but you did not keep your promise, are the words which they reproach him with. This is not true. It is a great lie. Not Moses, but they themselves are to blame. Very early the next morning there is a great commotion. The people also leave their tents. They are anxious to know the outcome of this test. Secretly, they hope that Korah is right. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram come walking with their censers. Look, the 250 princes also come stepping along, each of them carrying a censer. They all come to a stand near the tabernacle. Daringly, they look around. How impudent they are! Moses and Aaron also come. The face of Moses is grave. The people stand around in a large ark. It is quiet as death. Everyone waits. Suddenly, the glory of the Lord appears in the cloud which rests upon the tabernacle. A clear light shines from this cloud. The Lord speaks from this cloud to Moses and Aaron. Go to the side, away from the people. I will kill every one of them. But they do not go to the side. Behold, Moses bends his knees. O Lord, he pleads, do not do that. Must all the people die for the sake of a few? What will God's answer be? Moses waits in suspense. Hearken. The Lord again speaks. Go and say to the people that they must go away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Moses does as he is told. People, depart. Go away from the tents of these wicked men. Something dreadful is going to happen. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram will not die in an ordinary manner. But a gap shall come in the earth, and these men shall sink away into it. O people, listen and go away so that you do not die with them, he cries. And the people obey. They go backward a distance, leaving a large open space existing around the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Behold, these three men come to the door of their tents, and they see that they are left alone. A false grin comes over their faces. It is good. They still keep on and will not give in. The wives and children of Dathan and Abiram come and stand with them. They agree with Dathan and Abiram. However, the children of Korah leave their father and flee away. Thus, the children of Korah do not agree with their father and will not go along with him. It is breathlessly quiet for a moment. Everyone waits to see what will happen. No one dares speak a word. Suddenly, a cracking noise resounds, and then, oh look, a broad, deep gap comes into the earth, exactly under the tents of the three rebels. A sharp cry rings out. Dathan and Abiram, their wives and children, also Korah, their tents and all that they own, disappear into the unfathomable depths. They go alive into hell. Oh, how terrible that is! They yell, groan, and cry so loudly that the Israelites stop their ears with their fingers and run away as fast as they can. In the Bible we read that they fled at the cry of them. Thus, they could no longer listen to their cry. A little later, the earth again closed. But nothing is to be seen of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram or their tents. They have disappeared, for the earth has swallowed them. But something else happens. All this time, the 250 princes stand by the tabernacle with the censers in their hands. As they are standing there, suddenly a fire comes from the tabernacle, and they all fall dead upon the ground. The Lord will not permit himself to be mocked. The rebels are punished. Later, the Lord commanded Moses that Eleazar, a priest, the son of Aaron, should pick up the 250 brazen censers. He must make brazen plates of this brass, which were to be hung on the brazen altar of burnt offerings, which stands in the court. They always were to hang there as a warning to the people. The Israelites slowly walk to their tents. It is quiet and deserted around the tabernacle. Still, the Israelites are not contented. The following day they again assemble together. They say to Moses and Aaron, "You are the cause of all those people, those princes, being killed yesterday. You are really murderers." Isn't that awful, children? Moses did not kill those 250 princes. The Lord did it. That accusation was false. That accusation was not true. Moses does not know what to do. Will this people keep on? He goes to the tabernacle and asks the Lord for advice. The glory of the Lord again appears. The Lord again interposes. Oh, look! Suddenly the Israelites fall down by the hundreds. They collapse and immediately are dead. "Hurry, hurry," Moses calls to Aaron when he sees this. "Quickly take a censer and sacrifice for the people. Make an atonement for this wicked, dissatisfied people. Otherwise, they will all die. The punishment of the Lord already has begun. Aaron runs to the tabernacle, takes a censer, lays fire in it, sprinkles incense on the fire, and hurries back. Happily, the Lord accepts that offering. The punishment ceases, and Aaron stands between the living and the dead. The ground is strewn with dead bodies. No one dares to speak now. They all are filled with terror. Soon, they are busily burying all the dead, counting them as they bury them. When they finish, they find that in this short time, 14,700 people have died. O children, that is the result of their sin. If only they had not done it. That night, much sorrow reigned in the tents of the Israelites. The Lord had given his answer. Moses had not made himself captain, but the Lord had, and his brother Aaron had been appointed high priest by the Lord. The people may not murmur about that, for it is God's work. They know it now, but it has cost thousands of lives. The Lord wants them to see it more plainly. Upon the command of the Lord, the head of each tribe must take a rod. These rods must be ordinary sticks, not living, but dead sticks, out of which the life has long gone. There are 12 tribes, so 12 rods were brought. The name of a tribe is written upon each rod, so that Moses would not be able to make a mistake. Behold, Moses takes these 12 rods, goes into the tabernacle, and lays them down before the Lord. A little later, he comes back without the rods. You may now go to your tents, Moses says to these princes. Come back tomorrow morning. The following morning, the princes again stand before the tabernacle. Moses goes inside to get the rods. Each receives his own rod with their tribe's name written on it. They remained dead. Nothing is changed in them. Only one rod is changed, and that bears the name of Aaron. During this one night, leaves and blossoms have grown on this rod, yes, even fruits too. The people see this and are impressed. That is a great wonder. This way the Lord reveals that Aaron has been appointed by him as the high priest. Look, you Israelites, and observe. Only the rod of Aaron blossoms. Only the rod of Aaron lives. This proves that only Aaron and his sons may perform the priestly office. Do you believe it now? Yes, now they believe it. They do not grumble anymore. Quietly and silently, everyone goes to his tent. Now they realize how wicked they have been. They have not rebelled against Moses. Oh no, but they have rebelled against God. They do not throw away the blossoming rod of Aaron. Indeed not, but it must be saved. It is placed in the ark, the two stone tables upon which God had written the Ten Commandments, are already lying there, safely tucked away. Also, the pot of manna is there, and now the rod of Aaron, which budded, is laid there too. This is done so that the Israelites would never, never forget it.